So you're a little bit emotional, but so you've gone behind the Newmarket Road end. A lot of fans out there, Greg. Is there celebrating?
There's a lot of people out there. I mean, it's hard to obviously keep everybody socially distanced and things like that, but we just had to go out and give them a wave and celebrate with them for a little bit.
What the fucking you?
Oh, but sorry for that. That's Hiram, and I will apologise for him.
And we're sorry for any fruity language, but obviously.
So I'd like to know where you got the notion.
To Under the Abbey Stand. My name's Jack Swinhurst, and we have done it. After a season unlike any of us have ever experienced before, Cambridge United delivered the goods on the final day and secured promotion to League One. I'm joined by Julian Roberts, Tom Walker, Jordan Morland, and Owen Kiernan to bask in the glory of an incredible achievement and look in detail at the events of 8th of May 2021. Coming into the game off the back of a tired 1-0 defeat to Stevenage and an insane 5-4 loss to Harrogate, there were some serious nerves around. Julian, how are you feeling when you woke up on Saturday morning?
Hi, Jack. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to have all five of us here. This might be a UTAS first, having all five of us, actually. But momentous occasions call for momentous pods. Saturday morning, so we're going straight into the worst part of the day. Nice. All right. It can only get better. Saturday morning, I think there's a running commentary on our little pod chat, that WhatsApp chat, that I've been in especially negative over the past few weeks, completely convinced that we're going to bottle this. And on Saturday morning, I think it was impossible of the, what was it, 27 permutations. I felt it impossible that any of the 26 that saw United going up would come true. And I know that's just massively cynical, massively negative of me, but that was just the state of mind I was in. After seeing, and I know we're trying to brush over Harrogate, I know we're trying to leave it out of our minds and pretend the game never happened, and maybe there'll be an analysis of it in a season review pod at some point. But seeing that and the pressure the boys were under, and then doubling or tripling that pressure for the last game of the season, I just couldn't see any other way out of it. So weirdly, my nerves, I didn't feel that bad Saturday morning until the game actually kicked off. I watched the game with Tom, and we both said about 3 hours before kickoff, like, sort of what will be in a way. So it was sort of not as nervy in the morning as I'd expected to be. But by 3 p.m., that had racked up significantly.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Waking up with a hangover that day was bad enough. But if you think about the nerves that were running through every single Cambridge fan's veins, Jordan, I imagine you were very much the same. I know that you get quite nervous before games like this.
Just a very nervous creature anyway. At the start, Jack, you said that we've never experienced this before. Technically, not true. Owen and I are definitely old enough to have experienced finishing second in League Two on the final day. Just this time round, it was way more enjoyable because we won and we secured something rather than we lose and don't win anything. So this was far the greater experience and definitely something I would recommend over the Brentford escapade of, what, two decades ago. I should probably get over that at some point, shouldn't I? I live with a Brentford fan after all. I woke up on the morning feeling pretty nervous, and I think I felt worse the Saturday morning before waking up after the Harrogate game. I know we said we wouldn't talk about Harrogate and the centre back performance and the performance of others across the back five. But I definitely woke up feeling worse on the Saturday after the Harrogate game, really feeling like we'd sort of blown it away. I don't know. It's weird. I'm on the verge of turning 35. I've been a football fan and a Cambridge fan for the vast, vast majority of those 35 years. And yet I don't think I've ever experienced sort of waking up on the morning and having feelings towards the team and the situation in the games like I have these previous 2 weeks. And I've experienced promotions and relegations during that time. And I think it's just maybe, I don't know, I wish someone on this call was a psychologist who could help me work this out. But I feel like, I wonder if perhaps it's the whole connection to the club this year that I know a lot of people feel the same as me. They feel a lot closer to the club this year because of everything that's been going on with COVID and lockdown and all the things taken away from your life, and having the football on the Saturday is the one kind of positive thing. Definitely felt so much more these last two weekends, and I think that just sums up the whole feeling across the last 46 games. But terrific to get across the line, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I probably differ from you two in that, Julian and Jordan, in that I don't think there was one sort of overriding emotion or one overriding sort of feeling waking up on Saturday and sort of looking forward to the game. I think it was just going through that same cycle of sort of three emotions that I had been for the sort of last, probably since the Newport game. That sort of like, wow, we're really going to do it. And then, oh no, we might not do it. And then you sort of go round and round in circles almost. I think that's what was pretty much happening. I think, to be fair, because, you know, you obviously watched, I think, the early kickoffs of the championship games, and you see who's going to be joining you. And when you see Sheffield Wednesday coming down, and, you know, who knows, Derby might still yet join them. That's when the sort of weight of what's about to come really starts to hit you. And then I saw the team sheet and I thought Bonner made the right decisions on the day, sort of going into the game, and that makes you feel confident. And then sort of leading up to kickoff, that's when you start to get a bit nervy. I mean, we'll talk about the game in a minute. The first 10 minutes didn't really help that, because we didn't dominate throughout, should we say. There were certainly some nervier moments in there, I think. But and then all of that, I think actually the way that we did it was so much sweeter than if we'd, got a point against Stevenage, for example, and then another point against Harrogate, and then sort of, you know, I mean, I guess we sort of ended up crawling over the line a little bit, getting it done on the third bite of the cherry. But the way that it came down to the last day, sort of everything was left out on the pitch sort of thing, I think really added to, you know, what was an absolutely unbelievable, you know, day. And I think it crowns off what's been a remarkable set of events over the last sort of few months, really.
So Owen, I mean, you were there, you endured it firsthand live. How did it feel being there in the ground witnessing things from start to finish?
Weird. It felt weird. I mean, I think we spoke about this after Julian and Tom, you went to the Exeter game, didn't you? And then Jack and myself were lucky enough to go to the Stevenage game. And we was a little bit concerned that there was a UTAS curse upon the place. But
I'd just like to interrupt there that someone at the club actually texted me before the Grimsby game saying UTAS actually banned from the Abbey. And, we still snuck our way in.
Yeah, I was quite insistent. It was either that or kind of watch it in my car around the corner. So, that wasn't going to happen. It was weird because it's like, you know, it's such a unique season, isn't it? Like, you know, we've been through playoff games before, and, you know, we've been through promotions before, but you do that in an atmosphere with all your mates, with you know, thousands of fans in the ground, and for it to be essentially empty, you know, there's a handful of people there, handful of press and stuff, but it was a very weird atmosphere. It was it does kind of make you realize, just, I mean, you guys said like how much grief a referee gets, and he didn't get too much wrong. He didn't give Ironside a lot. He got a fair bit of stick, but just what certain players on certain teams are just such characters. And for us, we had Paul Digby was just like the loudest voice I think I've ever heard at football, and Greg as well. Like Greg Taylor was just absolutely superb. But telling everyone where to be, you know, holding everyone back. Like, you know, I'm going to apologise to him again because I've been pretty critical of him in the past. But definitely go up with Greg Taylor. Absolutely. But it was a strange atmosphere. I mean, it wasn't helped by the fact I'd probably spent the week after the week since the Harrogate game, just at the bottom of various bottles. So I was pretty hungover on the morning, and yeah, it didn't really help my mood.
Owen, did you notice a big difference between sort of the atmosphere amongst the players and maybe how they were shouting and speaking to each other between the Stevenage game and the Grimsby game? Were they a bit more up for it? I don't know. Was there any sort of difference that you felt being in there between them?
I don't know. I mean, the Stevenage game, again, we'll go into it in more depth at some other point, but I think you could just tell everyone was really tired. I think, you know, we'd had those two kind of big games before that, Newport and Orient, and you know, I think they just knackered everyone. They just tired everyone, and you know, the players were still up for it at Stevenage. It just didn't happen for them. And I think maybe they were, you know, I think they were thinking, yeah, we've still got two more games. Okay, we'll go and do it on Friday at Harrogate, which obviously didn't happen and should never be spoke of again. so yeah, no real difference. But I mean, the players did their job. They were calm. Tom, you said like Bonner made the right decisions in kind of taking Drysdale, Idale and Boateng out of the 11. Yeah, he absolutely did. Like, you know, you can just see what, you know, Dunk's positional sense is better than Iredale's, I think. Okay, maybe he's not quite as exciting going forward anymore, but you know, we didn't need that. We didn't need to be rash on Saturday. We just needed to be calm. We needed to, you know, play our game and do what we've done well all season, which is, you know, which is just play our game patiently and the goals will come. And you know, I think that if you look at the stats, you know, we had what, 28% possession in the first half. You know, they were all over us, but we did our job. We found a way.
Owen, one last question about being in the stadium. Were you tempted to just ignore all the rules and just get up and go sit next to Paul Wanless or Shaggy because you saw them?
I did have a few people say to me, are you going to run on the pitch at the end? But I thought, you know, we was already technically banned from going. I didn't want to be banned next season too.
Run on the pitch and yell swear words during a BBC live interview. Oh, no, someone already did that.
So if we look a bit more into the actual game, as you said, it wasn't the best start for Cambridge. You know, they weren't on top from the off, but that Liam O'Neill goal really calmed things down. And if you look at the scoreline, obviously, you know, completely professionally done and never in doubt. But when you're a fan of a club and you know what's gone before, I'm sure there are people out there, you know, even when it was 2-0, before Mullin got the third, probably thinking this is all going to still go wrong somewhere. And looking at the other games, of course, both of the teams concerned, Bolton and Morecambe, you know, were quite comfortable. I think there was always a worry. How did you rate how Cambridge managed that game, Tom?
Yeah, it was perfect. I think it, you know, touched on the sort of selection, and I think it all comes really back to that. I think the guys that were brought into the team, O'Neill, Ocadina and Dunk, they're exactly the sort of mentality of footballers that you need in a game like that. I think the way that Ocadina plays the game is so good for someone of his age. Look, there's been the odd dodgy performance in there since he's coming online, but I think by and large he's been such a calm presence at the back. And again, for someone of that age, of that sort of relative inexperience, he makes it look so easy. And Dunk's, he's through the sort of 10 years that he's been here now, has transformed from this really exciting sort of flair player going forward to this dependable left back that's, you know, been such a huge part of a team that's eventually got promoted. And I'm sure we'll come on to those, you know, those two, Greg and Duncan, a bit more details. It makes it a bit sweeter. And O'Neill, you know, for someone who in the time that he's had here has, you know, received a lot of criticism, I think when he's played this season, has been excellent, really, pretty much completely. So I think largely it comes down to the team selection. I thought Bonner's tactics on the day were absolutely spot on, and you know, what a time to get it right. The way that we managed the game, I think, was actually really interesting, and probably similar to how we did maybe a bit earlier on in the season. Actually, we mentioned, I think, Owen, you mentioned the possession stats sort of in the first half. On the face of it, they don't look great, but what we, I think, decided to do was, look, let's just let them have the ball and defend, and let's just let them keep it. And like you say, you know, you know at some point this team, they'll score goals. I wasn't comfortable. I don't think the sort of thousands of fans that bought iFollow passes watching it were comfortable. But I imagine the one person who was very comfortable with it would have been Mark Bonner, because I imagine that's exactly how he planned the game to go. And it was, I think, a perfect set of tactics executed really well by, well, what's going to go down as one of our greatest teams, I think.
What's interesting about the lineup is, with the exception of an injured goalkeeper and a centre-back who got recalled by his parent club, nine of the 11 were the same nine that started against Carlisle on the very first game of the season, which is quite interesting. Sort of, I don't know, that sort of pattern. It's quite rare to see that. So I agree with Tom. I thought the tactics were spot on. The idea to relieve the pressure on us and not go gung-ho like we have done in the opening half or the opening 20 in quite a few games, especially the Harrogate game, instead to just calm it down and say, actually surrender possession to Grimsby, a team that we feel comfortable that we can contain and aren't particularly deadly on the ball. And yeah, it just worked really well. It just sort of managed it. And genuinely, the moment Liam O'Neill struck that goal, which by the way was brilliant, it was only bettered by the knee sliding celebration, which he got right this time. I just felt like the moment that goal went in, I just didn't feel like Grimsby would score twice. I felt quite positive from that sort of, what, 20, 25 minutes in. And then, yeah, Wes's second goal was just at the right time as well. So I kind of enjoyed the last 20, 30 minutes. I felt after that second goal and we sort of rode the sort of instant reaction from Grimsby, I don't know, just the whole day was just so professional and just so spot on. It's quite funny sort of comparing it to the previous Friday night, which was just the opposite from professional. It was just mental. So, fair play to Bono. He had big calls going into that game, especially in midfield. I think everyone was expecting the changes in defence because they worked so well second half against Harrogate. But picking a central midfielder to partner Digby was a big call. Dropping Boateng when you need to not lose a game is a massive call because he's such a talent. Personally, I thought we'd see Adam May come in, but I'm glad he picked O'Neill because, yeah, what a moment. What a moment for him. Like Tom says, he's not had the easiest time at the club with injuries and, fan response and that relationship hasn't always been great. But what a time to have the best season of your five seasons with a club. And it's really great to see someone sort of local on there on the end celebrating going up.
You said just then, Jordan, that you felt confident after the first goal. Yeah. You also said earlier you've been watching Cambridge United 25 years. I was never confident.
This is more a remark about Jack's second team, Grimsby. I just didn't think they were going to be. I just didn't get the impression that they were going to be cutting edge enough to score twice. Like I could see them equalising, but they'd have to score twice and we'd have to lose for us to then drop out. I just didn't see it happening. And especially when we got the second, I was like, there's no way we're going to concede three here. Surely not.
Third goal for me was for one, but yeah, I've seen enough Cambridge United games to know that a 1-0 lead against the shittest team in the division in a must win game is not a particularly comfortable place.
Especially when both Morecambe and Bolton were winning at that stage. That was what was really... You asked about nerves at the start, Jack. If you want the most nervous point of the day for me, there was a point at the start of the second half before we'd gone 2-0 up. We're 1-0 up and I think Morecambe scored a second and Bolton were 3-0 up against 10. And it was like, right, okay, everything it's now, there's nothing else you can rely on now. Of those 27 permutations, there's three left, which is Cambridge win, draw or lose, essentially. And yeah, that was the most nerve-wracking part of the day because, as Owen says, you know, we've all been watching United long enough to know that anything is possible. And at 2-0, I wasn't comfortable, George. It took me the third before I left for the ground. And at that point...
Was there a moment the opposite to that, though? Like, really early doors, like, within the first 5 minutes, I think, when Harrogate scored first, like the first of anyone in any of those games to score. Was there a part of anyone here that thought after 4 minutes, oh God, we might actually win the title?
Yeah, like, it was when Mullen had that chance as well, right? I think that first chance, you know, the one in the first 10 minutes that comes across the box, I think Harrogate were 1-0 up at that stage. So at that point, you're thinking, oh, actually, we'll batter these. Obviously, these are crap. And Harrogate are going to go put five past Cheltenham because that's just what they do. That Brendan Kiernan's just... Anyway, I'm not talking about him.
Well, one thing I will point out from being at the game just quickly was the promotion hoardings that every fan likes to tweet on Twitter when someone fucks up a promotion clinching game. And we've had our fair share of that. They did actually keep him in the van this time. I went for a piss on about 86, 87 minutes and went down there and Gaz Daniels and someone from Sky was kind of like taking him out the back of the van to say, yeah, thanks for that, because that definitely, yeah, stopped us getting a ton of grief if we had messed it up.
Pissed all over him.
Keep him in the van.
I mean, when it got to that point...
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Owen, because that was the image that I was dreading. Like that image of those like sad promotion orders that are like cut in half, just like by the side of the pitch. Like
our champagne players bottles, which say like we're going like in a box and stuff, like all of that.
Owen, did you see did they have like a replica trophy there or anything like that? Did they get that carried away or did they sort of leave that?
I think if they did, it must have still been in the van. Like, but by that point, you know, I think Cheltenham were kind of comfortably up, and yeah, I didn't see any red trophy.
I'd have absolutely loved it if it was just on a plinth the whole game, just waiting.
During the Brentford game that Jordan mentioned earlier, they did have it out on a plinth in the middle of a pitch. At the end, because that was obviously a championship decider. Both teams were already promoted, so it was just back in 99. And they did have the trophy, the actual League Two or Division Three championship trophy there on a plinth in the centre circle for the Brentford players to go and get. And I remember thinking at the time, like, I could just run on and nick that. Like, I was like 16 at the time. I was still fairly quick. It's like, I could have that, just get it, lob it in the NRE and just have a great day.
That is weird that you say about that replica trophy, though, because I did see Owen hot-footing it away from the Abbey about 5:30 on Saturday with what looked like a trophy under his arm, but I'm guessing there was no replica trophy there to be had. But you mentioned that Mullen goal going in, and then everyone, you know, kind of realising, or even the biggest pessimist knowing that was it. And, yeah, as you said, a lot of people made their way to the ground, and it was kind of an incredible feeling after that goal. And yeah, we made our way to the ground responsibly, etc. But how was that feeling being down at the Abbey amongst all the fans?
I think we should go to Owen on this, because Owen, I think you were the only one who saw them on the NRE out of us, because we were all, I thought we did, we just were a bit late
scurrying to the ground.
Yeah, I saw it from behind the NRE turnstiles. So, I soon ran around. I think you gave me a call, Jordan. You're like, right, I'm out in front. It's like, okay, you know, fuck this. I don't really want to be in here. I want to be with all the fans and that. And then, yeah, you guys turned up very, very shortly after. And, we had a good
time. I'd have absolutely loved it if you'd have just got on there with him. if you'd have just climbed up there.
I'm sure it's one out of all of us. I'm not jumping up on the NRE turnstiles. One, I couldn't reach, and two, I'd injure myself falling off for sure. But no, it was great. I mean, you know, we've all seen the photos. You know, there's some absolutely iconic photos of Mullen up there and Ocadina, I think, with the yellow smoke flare and things like that. It's it was just fantastic. And, you know, to see all the players up there, to see the fans out. I think my favourite bit from the kind of videos I've seen afterwards is when Bonner goes up there and, like, the player, you know, he doesn't want the limelight, does he? He's not a particularly limelight-seeking guy, which is great. And, you know, he was one of the last ones up there, and they're just like, you know, go to your crowd, Mark. Like, you know, these are your people. Like, they love you. Go and lap it up, mate, because it won't happen again.
I think the thing that impressed me most about the whole day was the structural integrity of the NRE turnstiles, which must have been there for God knows how many decades, and they managed to support an entire squad of football players, stood on top of them, jumping around, like actual explosives being thrown at them. It was pretty remarkable, to be fair.
And how there was no footage of like Ian Dahler's face, just stood in the corner panicking about whether the weight will hold it or not.
The stewards behind the area were pretty pissed off. They weren't too keen on the players going up there, but you know, it's like a pitch invasion, isn't it? Like the first couple of people who leg it on get collared, and then you know the floodgates open, don't they?
I think the one thing that I would say about the whole day, and it's obviously a really obvious thing to say, sort of looking back at the season as a whole, given what it's been with the pandemic and things like that. And look, I know that strictly speaking, it should have been groups of six, stood 2 meters apart, and all that sort of thing. But it was so good and so important to have that moment, not only as fans to be able to actually celebrate it, obviously not quite normally, but certainly properly, but also to be able to almost show those players and obviously the manager and the staff that sort of appreciation that otherwise they might not have got. And I think out of the everything that's sort of come out of the last, you know, few days, I think that's the one thing that I'll take away and really look back on and remember, is just to have that moment, that day, just that you can sort of look back on and cherish, you know, a bit more than sort of a highlights video in front of, you know, in sort of an empty football stadium. Those sort of personal memories about, you know, I mean, talk about nerves, the journey in the car to the ground. I was absolutely shaking because the driver who will be listening to this, who will remain nameless, was going to touch above the speed limit to get there. We got there and then, you know, you sort of get out the car and we just sort of ran to the ground, and I'm not going to lie, I was panting by the end of it because it seemed like quite a long run. We could have parked a bit closer, but you start to smell that sort of acrid, burnt smell of smoke bomb. You start to see the yellow smoke sort of wafting in the air. Your first thought is, are we being mustard gassed? You realise that that's not the case. and then, you know, you start to hear the songs. And you
is
see
that
the
your first thought?
It wasn't my first thought. In fact, it didn't even cross my mind, but it sounds funny, doesn't it? So you might as well get it in there. But yeah, then, you know, you see the crowds and then you start to, you know, bump into all the people that you've been going to games with for the last God knows how many years, and who, you know, for a lot of them you won't have seen for, you know, the last year or maybe even more because of everything that's gone on. So yeah, truly, truly memorable, and just a really good way to cap what's been a brilliant season.
I'd be really interested to see what you boys all think about this, because comparing it, the obvious thing to do, comparing it to 2014, the feeling of 2014, I think I'm right in saying, was just this overwhelmingly powerful feeling of relief. Right, that's 9 years of conference done, finally, third time of asking, playoff final, just this massive, obviously jubilation, but also just overriding sense of incredible relief that we were back in the big time. And I'd always maintained all season that this season has been incredible, but it would be purely joyous at the end of the season, like purely just pure celebrations. But because of the way we ended up doing it with the last bite of the cherry, you know, the third time of asking and the Bolton Morecambe both winning and everything, it was relief as well. I also felt just this incredible sense of relief, like we've actually done it. If we'd have beaten Stevenage, it would have been very different, I think. If we'd have done it against Stevenage, I mean, it would have been, do you know what I mean? It would have been a very different experience.
I think with getting promoted from a conference is a different kettle of fish altogether. Like you say, you're back in the league. It's maybe more important for the club more than anything. You know, like going to non-league football is great fun. You know, you have some fantastic away days there. It's not quite as professional, I suppose, as going to league clubs. But then you kind of think, okay, yeah, we're back in the big time, but we're back in League Two, and really no one gives a shit about League Two. It's never on telly, it's never in the newspapers. Whereas when you get out of League Two into League One, all of a sudden you're going to Sheffield Wednesday, you're going to Ipswich, you're going to Portsmouth, you know, you know, big clubs that come into League Two are generally only there for a season, you know, either on the way down like Luton were a few years ago and then back up again, or like Bolton have been this season. You know, but actually, like, next season, we're going to some proper decent grounds. We're going to play some, you know, big teams that have got big histories, and, you know, we're going to beat them.
I like how you got, like, a little dig at Luton in there, just as part of your yes. explanation. Just remind everyone that Luton did drop out of the Football League. I agree with what you're saying, Julian, because it did feel a little bit like a final. Obviously, we didn't have the glorious Wembley setting to go with it, but if we'd got a point against Stevenage and then lost to Harrogate, even if we'd won 3-0 against Grimsby, we'd have been happy, but we would have had, you know, one eye on Cheltenham and their score and their points total, and it wouldn't have taken anything away from enjoying the moment and respecting the team for what they've done, but there would be like that little, just that little sort of sparkle taken off ever so slightly, because you would have thought, oh, what if, you know, what if we had you know, on the last day leapfrogged them and won the title. It's completely different to sort of the conference promotion. I don't know if anyone listened to the Paul Barry interview that he did with Chris Mann on the Monday. It's on the BBC Sounds app if you can be bothered to go find it, but it's a really good half hour chat, and Paul Barry actually summed up the conference promotion really well. He said it was a redemption promotion, and like Julian said, it redeemed everything that had gone on in the 10 years before, dropping out the league, going into administration, nearly going bust, nearly getting relegated from the conference, the two playoff finals that we lost. You know, that was quite a traumatic 9-10 year period, and that sort of promotion kind of set the record straight and was that redemption. Whereas this one has just been so unexpected, like even as recent as a few weeks ago, I didn't expect us to go up. It was only really, you know, the Newport win, you know, when Drysdale scored that goal, that moment was like, this is happening, we're actually going up this year. So which made the last couple of weeks even worse with the two defeats. But it's weird to compare. Well, it's hard to compare the two promotions, but there's something about this one, because it was so unexpected, that it's just made it that extra bit sweeter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to see the differences. And of course, a lot of the people on the promotion day, regardless of whether it was at Wembley or not, we're at the game. You know, the difference when we all got to the ground was that everyone had, you know, some people had watched it together on a little screen. We know people who watched it in a pub garden on a phone, some people on tablets, and, you know, and people were getting to the ground on bikes and taxis, by foot, running, you know, going down Newmarket Road in a taxi on the way, explaining to the taxi driver, who's got very little interest in football, what had just happened. Was quite a weird experience. And like the coming over the hill, over the bridge, and seeing the smoke, like you say, emerging from the trees in front of the NRE, and then getting dropped off outside, and just kind of walking through the car park entrance and just seeing everyone, and then, like you say, immediately seeing people, was just, yeah, kind of an unreal feeling. And the relief of that day, that, yeah, it was a final, really, you know, when it came down to it, and we got over the line rather easily in the end. But yeah, that feeling was kind of incomparable to last time.
I had kind of the opposite, actually. So I live Mill Road area, so I went to the ground across Coldham's Common and alongside the glorious Habin. And there's anyone that goes that knows the Common, you've got two bits, and you've got three different bits, and it's only on that third, when you cross into that third bit, you finally see like the actual ground properly. I remember walking over that bridge and just seeing no one and just having this really mad panic where I was like, oh, everyone has followed the don't go to the ground instructions. What do I do? Do I turn back or not?
I'll tell you when
I decided to go through.
I'll tell you where there was a hilarious moment, which I think we were all at, was when, so after those festivities, let's say, outside in the front of the NRE, it sort of at some point stopped, and everyone made their way round to the car park and everyone's singing there and it's the same sort of scenes, it's jubilant, blah, blah, blah. And then the players come out and everyone's singing songs and Mullin's got his megaphone and then Bonner comes out and Bonner at one point, like, he says thank you and he goes, does everyone just mind leaving because we all need to go home? And everyone's like, yeah, see you later, boys. But I see no, there's no hesitation in anyone. It was like, no worries. And everyone just turned around and left in like a really orderly manner. It was like when Bonds tells you, you just go.
I'm Greg Taylor. You're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, and I think the UTAS boys should cheer up.
It's moments like Saturday, mate, isn't it? That's why we do it. That's why we put up with the Harrogates, the Stevenage game last season, you know, all the shit, all the crap we've seen, you know, MK Dons dicking us, Luton dicking us that time. Like, it just makes it so sweet, doesn't it? Like, being there with everyone, with all your mates, with some beer, with some yellow smoke bombs, with Bonner, with the players, it just, yeah, it's just like, you know, I kind of feel for people that, you know, support like a big team, you know, like your Man City or whatever from afar, you know, and don't kind of get there, you know. It's been really weird watching it all on iFollow this season, hasn't it? It's been like, you just feel a little bit, I don't know, just a little bit detached from the club. Or you could feel a little bit detached from the club. I think the club have done a fantastic job in keeping us, you know, keeping us connected to the club, whether that's by like the kind of pre-match stuff with you know, like Dave Vant and those guys, which, you know, they've done a great job in just kind of making, you know, making each game like a bit of an occasion, I suppose. And just, yeah, just kind of, you know, Bonner's superb at just keeping everyone up to date. And it's just, yeah, it's made a difficult season a lot easier for sure. And, you know, I think we all said earlier that we've all probably watched United more this season than, you know, than ever before, just by virtue of there being nothing else to do on a Saturday, like literally nothing else we can do on a Saturday. So, yeah, it's just fantastic, isn't it? And it, you know, it just all paid off in the NRE car park, basically, with everyone there.
Yeah, you kind of feel like there's some players who've been at the club so briefly, and some who've been there, like we've got the likes of Taylor and Duncan, who've been there for so long. Every single player, it's easy to jump on a bandwagon of a team get promoted, but it felt like every single player who played a part was really passionately, you know, there for one, you know, celebrating what they've done, but also there for the fans. It did feel like there were players there who were, you know, Luke Hannon breaking through a group of stewards and police to get to the fence to, you know, just, you know, have that seconds of celebration with the fans. You know, everyone was doing it, and they gave, you know, they spent a lot of time just standing about, you know, taking pictures, like waving to fans, and like there was a real feel of connection between the fans and the players, even though, you know, we've had so little of that at games this season, or we've had basically none of it. And Bonner also raised the point about the games that we did have were pretty piss poor. So, you know, it's nice to have that connection between the fans, and then, yeah, I suppose look forward to, yeah, who knows what's going to happen in League One, but it was certainly an exciting day. Moment of everyone's day. What's your favourite moment of your day? I'm going to put you on the spot, Julian.
Favourite moment of my day? It was probably the next morning. How about that? When
wrong day. Fuck up.
But I'm counting it as one experience. I want to get this story in. Yeah, I must have told you all. The first thing I wake up to on Sunday morning, obviously my memory stops somewhere around 8 p.m. on Saturday evening. I was absolutely mullered, for the record. I was absolutely gone. And I wake up on Sunday morning, and obviously everyone listening, well, some people listening might have experienced the fear before, when you don't really quite remember what happened the night before. And I looked at my phone that was next to me, and the first thing on there is just a message from Greg Taylor. And I thought, what can that be? What has happened here? So I opened it. So it's at half midnight that he sent me this. And I was like, oh no, what? I mean, I didn't know Greg that well. So I opened it and I text him at 9:30 just saying, yous are going up and nothing else. And he just replied a few hours later saying, and he just said, get in there and a few love hearts. But that was my favourite moment.
That's a good one. Jordan, any highlights for you? I mean, it was all any? A highlight. Yeah. I'm sure it was all a highlight. But
there was a couple. There was a couple. The third goal and just that feeling of we're definitely doing this. It's happened. And like the casual sort of walk off that Mullin did as he scored, that was pretty high. I feel bad saying this because it goes against the whole sort of COVID precautions, but just being around so many fans, seeing so many people, seeing people face to face that I hadn't seen for a long time. I don't want to say, you know, seeing and cuddling Tom Walker, but I'm going to have to say it. That was a special feeling because I haven't seen him for such a long time. But yeah, just that whole not allowed but happened anyway kind of convergence of the crowd and singing and the smoke bombs. That whole atmosphere was pretty special as well. And also following on from Julian's point. deciding to get a taxi to the ground quite late in the evening to pull up into the New Market Road car park to then just decide that actually it's not happening and get the same, not even get out of the taxi, but get the taxi driver to drive us back to the pub that we were just in was pretty funny. And Tom Dobbin was in the taxi with us, who's been on pods before. Him calling Paul Wanless from the taxi was also pretty special. So yeah, there you go. I've rambled on and given you about four or five. So someone else skips this highlight.
Have I told you about the phone call I made? Sorry to interrupt.
Really?
Have I told you about this? I was again scrolling through my phone thing, and when me and George chatted to Mark Bonner earlier in the season, I obviously had his number, and someone convinced me to just call him at 8:30. And I was just scrolling through it the next morning. It was like Jordan, Jack, blah, 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 like very normal people. And then just Mark Bonner appears there. Oh, dear, Jules. Obviously ignored it. I mean, imagine that. Oh, that guy that did the podcast. Yeah. I'll definitely pick that up right now.
Yeah. Good timing.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed when we was obviously the game certainly you know when Mullin's goal went in was fantastic and the final whistle even better. I quite enjoyed when we was around by the main stand car park and you, Julian, had one of your friends up on your shoulders.
I know where this is going.
he listens to this, right? And I saw him on Sunday. And he said the first thing he thought about when he woke up on Sunday morning was this, which was I put him on my shoulders. Very, very dear friend of mine that I've been up and down the country with. Put him on my shoulders. He's got a smoke bomb in his hand, waving it around. And he just looks down at me and for a laugh, just puts it straight in front of my mouth. I took the biggest lungful.
Yeah, it was really dodgy kind of yellow
hand. I'll come out looking like a Simpson.
I don't want to do you any injustice, but moments before that incident happened, I remember seeing this lad on your shoulders and just being impressed that you had him up there. I was like, I didn't have you down for having much upper body strength. So, apologies
you
for clearly
didn't you. See me.
It almost made my top five moments of the day, realizing how strong you are, but it didn't quite make it.
You clearly didn't see all the failed attempts to get him up there then. That's probably why he actually did it, just as a little payback.
It was certainly, it was certainly a good sight to see. And Tom, any outstanding memories or any memories at all of the day?
That's a dig. Disgraceful.
Any tattoos, Tom?
No.
I was going to end on that.
I'll tell you what, Swindle. I'll tell you what, mate. You can leave the tattoo story for your highlight. How does that sound? I'd probably just say O'Neill's goal. I know it's a really obvious one, the goal that essentially wins you promotion, but I think the fact that it was him from Cambridge, the goal that, you know, essentially gets us up, the way that it happened, you know, the set piece, that sort of you see it looping over from Ironside's header at the back post and just smashes it in. Then the celebration obviously sets us on our way. That's a really obvious one. But I think, you know, sort of turning the corner, coming out of Cutthroat Lane, down Newmarket Road into the NRE car park, and then just sort of like making your way through a crowd to see people that, you know, you've not seen for a very long time. And, you know, it's obviously starting to go a little bit mental, shall we say. And just like another one of those that you know, sort of stays with you. So I probably have to go with those two. And probably the third one would probably have to be that first sip of Guinness in the Dobblers after the game. That was refreshing.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that. That was going to feature somewhere in my day. I mean, yeah, just echoing what everyone said, really. I think, like, incredible feeling being at the ground, seeing people I've not seen in over a year, having the drum being banged, you know, and chanting along with that brought back great memories of the NRE. And, yeah, and then by chance, bumping into Liam O'Neill, Joe Ironside and Barry Corr the next day and chewing their ears off. And I'm sure, and I'm not sure if any of them listen, but if you do, I'm sorry for chewing your ear off so much while you're trying to enjoy your hungover Sunday in Cambridge. But yeah, that was great. And I don't think I've really got any more stories apart from that, to be honest. I think that pretty much wraps it up. If you were going to get anyone's name tattooed, you wouldn't go for any of the players or CUFC. You'd just go and get Swindle tattooed on your forearm, wouldn't you? So that's what I did in the early hours of Sunday morning, after just feeling great, you know, feeling so good after the game.
Honestly, I think that could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
So if Jack hasn't made it clear, he got Swindle tattooed on his arm and woke up to find it on his arm the next morning. But I spoke to you in the morning, and in that moment, you could have been like, oh, tell you what, yeah, get Paul Mullin tattooed on my arm.
Yeah.
As I said just before we started, imagine then he goes Bristol Rovers in a week or whatever. But, oh, no.
Oh, I've just got this like brilliant recurring sort of vision in my mind's eye of him on Sunday morning, just trying to wash it off and just realising. It's not happening.
That's weird. This biro on my arm.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what, Jack? That could come in handy because there might be a time when you forget your name and you go, oh, there it is.
Well, those who know me knows that isn't beyond the realms of possibility. So, yeah, you might be right. It might be a good reminder. But, yeah, a cracking day. And, yeah, just, you know, one that will stick very long in the memories after a pretty torrid season in the world, let alone in League Two. And Cambridge United did it. We did it the hard way. We wouldn't have it any other way. But a fantastic showing. We're going to bring you more pods coming up. We're going to bring you a season review in full, as well as looking at the retained list and, you know, any players coming in and leaving Cambridge. We'll be bringing you plenty of content over the summer. And of course, there is a small international football tournament happening as well. So we'll probably watch a bit of that with some of you. But yeah, it's amazing news. Cambridge United are up. Jordan Warland, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Owen Kiernan, thank you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Good to be back.
And Julia Roberts, thank you.
Thank you. Was it Swindle?
Yeah, that's right.
Just check.
Oh, the fucking yellows, aren't they? Right, that sounds good.
The fucking news!
The fucking news!